Welcome to episode 106 of the British Bird Gang Breakdown, and I must begin with apologies that this is going to be another one of those episodes, one with disappointment in abundance, so much so that you'll think we've gone back in time to 2018. So, if you want to join us in a spot of time travelling, I'm Tom, and I'm joined by Callum to break down whatever that was this past weekend.
Yeah, time travel to 2018 indeed. We've even got some old school technical issues tonight, which haven't plagued us in a long time. So hopefully we're going to be able to cobble together a recording in the meantime and get it going. But yeah, bit of an odd game. Definitely not the game that any of us wanted to see, I think. But I'm sure we'll get onto that in due course, because in the meantime, we've got some news.
Yes, we've got a couple of pieces of news to start the episode off this week. And the main one is the fact that COVID has claimed Larry Fitzgerald and others, but, you know, mainly Larry Fitzgerald, the GOAT, the one that most people care about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, breaking news kind of like late on Friday, I think it was, that he wasn't going to be able to play on Sunday. Yeah, definitely something that got people quite worked up, and I think rightfully so. You know, there was potentially a streak on the line that I know everyone was immediately worried about.
I think that's the thing most people really cared about, was like, is the streak going to end? But, you know, don't worry, the streak is safe. I repeat, the streak is safe. Apparently he has to actually play in the game for it to count towards that.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense. And, you know, that was kind of the sigh of relief for me as well, I've got to say. Because, you know, at the end of the day, and you know, maybe we can discuss that, you know, later on and during the game review as well. But I don't think that team particularly missed him beyond him bringing his leadership and everything that he does bring to the team. In terms of sort of play for play, I don't think that he was a missed body on the field particularly.
Not particularly, no, but I mean, the other two players who were ruled out for COVID might have been seen more so.
Yeah, that's true. Deontay Thompson and Trent Sherfield were both on that list as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely miss Thompson because we're already shorthanded at the safety position. Without him available for the game, we were shorthanded like we were on the defensive line the other game.
Yeah, definitely. It's another position that I think, you know, we need to be sort of considering kind of longer term depth at. I mean, a number of defensive positions are really, you know, if you think about D-line, safety and cornerback too, you know, those are all positions that we don't really have, you know, people who are necessarily set at. But I would definitely say that Deontay Thompson is kind of one of our closest to, you know, permanent safeties behind Buda Baker.
And also Trent Sherfield, because I think we missed his presence on the special teams, given the issues, we should be saying, what that had in the game.
Yeah, issues is putting it lightly, I think that's fair to say. But yeah, definitely some missing wheels there. But when it came to Fitz, you know, as long as that streak wasn't broken, I was quite happy.
And of course, he's still apparently in fine health and looking likely to return for Sunday's game against LA. So all things considered, we got off pretty lightly.
Of course, that is really the first thing that we should have said, wasn't it? Is like, you know, we're thankful that he is relatively well, you know, is likely to come back and you know, has no health complications or anything like that.
And of course, the fact that he's healthy from it means we can actually crack the joke about him catching everything, including COVID.
Yeah, and Tom ever wanting to squeeze those dad jokes into the podcast, but they are indeed, it was definitely a joke, shall we say.
The delivery was much better, I should say, in the first recording, but sadly that's not to be seen by anyone any time.
Yeah, exactly. In the like erased tapes or whatever, the lost tapes, Tom did get that joke out much better, but this time he just had to squeeze it in. So actually, speaking of COVID, NFL's banned teams from facilities on Monday and Tuesday. Basically, I think that they're looking at, you know, Baltimore Ravens, and they're going like, well, you know, this is clearly ramping up nationwide. We've got to do something to kind of break this in the meantime.
Well, actually, I was listening to Patrick Peterson's podcast before this recording, and he says they still have to go to the facility for daily testing, obviously. And also, if players are injury rehab, that sort of thing, they're allowed to go in. But, like, there's no meetings, no walkthroughs, nothing like that.
Yeah, so it's just basically, like, in-person group activities that have been cancelled.
Yeah, although the testing facility is actually, like, outside the practice facility, so you don't actually have to go there for testing.
Yeah, which makes sense, I think. You know, it's just like you get your mandatory test done. You know, I think a lot of the teams, I'm not actually sure how the Cardinals have it set up, but, you know, I've seen some of the teams have like essentially basically a drive-through testing facility as well.
Yeah, I'd assume most teams probably have like the same sort of like layout, wouldn't they? Like if it works for one, why wouldn't it work for the others?
Yeah, exactly. Especially with it being a kind of NFL mandated thing, I imagine they would set something, you know, relatively standard across all teams.
And of course, the second piece of news we've got this episode is the fact that it was announced yesterday that our Week 16 game against the 49ers has been assigned to December 26th, which is Boxing Day.
Yeah, that's a brilliant day for football, frankly. Like, what a time to have football, because you've kind of got your family commitments out the way on the 25th. 26th, you've just got leftovers, beer and football. How good is that?
I know, like, usually Boxing Day is, like, assigned for normal football anyway, but, you know, we've got Arizona Cardinals football this week. Well, this year, rather. So I'm happy with that. Get to see Crew beat Fleetwood at 3 o'clock. And then see Arizona beat whatever's left of the 49ers at 8:30 p.m. Can't complain.
What a time to be alive. Although it will be interesting because I think that might be, in that case, a double home game, kind of.
Speaking of which, the San Francisco game could be a bit weird because for their next two home games, they're going to be using State Farm Stadium.
Yeah, so Santa Clara, where the 49ers' current stadium is, has indeed decided to ban contact sports and a bunch of other, you know, sort of group activities, which is fair enough. I'm trying to curb their COVID numbers, but just with the way schedules have fallen and stuff like that, it turns out it's been all right for San Francisco to get in on the Arizona Cardinals facility, where they have a set up shop for a couple of games. Did you see the Cardinals tweet about that?
The ones where they're using film, is it GIFs from like Step Brothers, the film?
Yeah, yeah. If you've not seen it, it's worth having a look at the Cardinals social media accounts and the 49ers social media accounts. Just having a bit of a laugh with each other about that, which I thought was quite nice.
I've never actually seen that film, you know?
It's all right. It's fine.
I mean, it's a Will Ferrell film, you know? It's nothing special.
I have, however, met John C. Reilly, and he is lovely.
Just a name drop there, I hear.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, should we get on to our game recap? Because, you know, we may as well get it over with.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not one any of us want to talk about. Finished New England 20, Arizona Cardinals 17. And we've got negatives to talk about. We do have some positives to talk about. But, you know, really, it's such an odd game because it didn't feel like a loss. It just felt like a win that wasn't deserved and therefore not given, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at the game and you think, maybe we shouldn't have lost that one. But also you'd feel a bit like, well, I suppose you wouldn't feel bad winning, but, like, you just feel like we didn't deserve it, really, to win that game.
Yeah, you know, like, see if and we'll get onto this, I'm sure, in more detail, but if Zane Gonzalez had kicked that field goal and we'd managed to get the stop and run the clock out and done all the things and it was, you know, a flipped score, I think we'd have been sitting here talking about the same negatives in the same negative light and without any additional positives, you know what I mean? Like, it would be the same negatives and the same positives.
Zane Gonzalez would still get his weekly mention either way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would be the one difference. But Zane Gonzalez definitely needs his own bit to talk about, but it wasn't him that lost us the game completely. I mean, starting off with the negatives, we've got to talk special teams.
Yeah, but we're not going to give Zane Gonzalez his own section. He's not that way. If you like Kyler Murray.
No, he's not a Kyler Murray, but, you know, we'll talk about Zane Gonzalez specifically, but, you know, let's face it, the whole special teams unit was a little bit off, you know, especially the returns unit.
Yeah, I mean, like, I struggle to actually remember the last time we had such an awful game from the special teams perspective, you know. Returns were terrible. The coverage on their returns was poor. Punting was off as well from Andy Lee. And obviously saying Gonzalez, less said about him, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, I got to say, you know, the part of this as well is that New England special teams did do particularly well. You know, I think they made our special teams look worse by comparison. But equally, it was just a case of them, of the Cardinals really not stepping up to the plate in that manner, you know. Sure, New England had been kicking well, but, you know, we should be able to get at least some level of return on it, and you know, choosing the right times to run it back and not. Sure, New England had an excellent return, but we blew coverage on it several times.
Yeah, I mean, people were highlighting the Andy Isabella where he like ran straight past the returner, but like, I think like it was a low punt, wasn't it? So
it was.
I just think like, did Andy Isabella think he'd waived fair catch and therefore he wasn't going to touch him?
Well, that's what I would have assumed, yeah.
Yeah, so like, I mean, you could criticize Andy Isabella for him, and you know, everyone does criticize Andy Isabella for literally everything he does.
Yeah, it's definitely, I feel, a bit of an Andy Isabella sort of you know, moment there, but yeah, I mean, regardless, it's the whole squad and the whole, you know, the whole of special teams on both sides of the ball really kind of failing to come together as a unit. Realistically, that's one of the things that gave New England a lot of breaks. You know, we were giving them extremely short fields quite a few times. In fact, we were giving them the ball in, you know, Cardinals territory a few times.
Yeah, I mean, they had short fields on several occasions due to the coverage allowing for big returns. And you also had that punt return touchdown chalked off for an illegal blindside block, which, I mean, rightfully so. It was a disgusting block to throw.
Yeah, I mean, I saw people, especially in the national media, talking about how that was a shame that that was blocked and how it was a clean block and everything. And I'm sure I'm biased, but that was not a clean block.
It wasn't at all, no. He just went for him. Like, there's no way the Cardinals player would have seen him. You know, it's just dirty play, isn't it?
Yeah, I have to agree. I think it's and the thing is as well, is like, it didn't have to be thrown in the way it was. You know, I think he could have had the same effect on the play, you know, without making it such a nasty block to throw or whatever. I think he just saw essentially a defenseless player and thought, I can have this guy, you know. At the end of the day, had they not thrown that block, you know, it would have gone a whole lot worse. And that was yet another example. You know, they had this touchdown that was, you know, almost walked in at that point from just blown coverage. And to be fair, it was an awful punt as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, Andy Lee just didn't seem to be punting as well as he usually does in that game. I'm not sure what the stats were, but, you know, he just didn't seem it from, like looking at it.
It was the sort of thing I was looking to see if we had a different long snapper or something, and I don't think we did.
No, I think he's always been the same guy, so it couldn't have been that.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just New England, you know, like the weather.
As I said, you know, I think that one of the things that's happening here is not just that our special teams has for some reason fallen off a cliff between last week and this. I think that New England's special teams played really, really well against us, and that's, you know, that's part of it.
But of course, the main culprit seems to be Zane Gonzalez, and he's now missed three crucial, what would have been, game-winning kicks. How long do we actually stick with him for?
There's this sort of stat going around Twitter at the moment that says that if it wasn't for the Hail Mary, which was a low percentage play, we would have lost the last, was it, four games on the trot. One of my arguments to that is that if Zane Gonzalez had hit, you know, his appropriate field goals, we would have been, you know, we would have won three of the last four.
I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it, with the Cardinals at the moment? Like, obviously they're keeping games close, which is good. But, like, one small mistake that's, like, might lose in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's one of those sort of things that kind of puts in perspective where the Cardinals are, right? And this is not where I planned to have this reality check, but I'm having it here now and here and now anyway. And that is that, you know, at the end of the day, we're currently, what is it, a 6-win team? I think that that's brilliant. I think that 6 wins is, you know, more or less about where a lot of people expected us to be in this season. It's higher than a lot of people expected us to be already at this point in the season. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're also a team that's only 2 years clear of having the number one overall pick. And at this point, we're in the mix, you know, not only have we got 6 wins, but we've got 5 losses where we were in the game. You know, we've got 4 of them for sure that we are like pretty much single score losses.
Yeah, but the thing is, little Timmy sees that he can win the Super Bowl on Madden, and he thinks that's real life, doesn't he? It's like, that isn't real life.
It's not real life. And, you know, I do agree that it's a real shame that Zane Gonzalez misses these kicks. And, you know, if he hits these kicks, we're, you know, an 8-win team, and life is grand and everything like that. But at the end of the day, the reason that you know, these field goals are missing is because we are losing and winning games by the narrowest of margins. And that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. You know, I think that as a team, we're growing. We've got, you know, movement and we're getting the right players in the right positions, but we're by no means a complete package at this point.
I mean, it's like what Darren Urban says in his Aftermath article, you know, the Cardinals play every game close, even with whatever issues may come up. And that's just exhilarating when they can win, but complete agony when they actually go on to lose the game. And that's just basically what the 2020 Cardinals is at the moment.
Yeah, it's like an emotions amplifier, isn't it? It's like every win is extra exciting and every loss is extra heartbreaking.
But what do you expect with the cardiac cards?
That being said, you know, issue at hand, Zane Gonzalez, we can argue all day about the merit of, you know, how we got into the situation that he had three, you know, game-winning kicks to hit. He has missed three pretty crucial field goals. Do, you know, how much longer do we stick with him?
I mean, the only other option we've actually got is Mike Nugent, who's on the practice squad. And he's like a 37-year-old guy, so he's obviously only going to be a short-term solution if he was brought up.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, there's always the option of picking up a free agent or whatever, but, I mean, with kickers, you're talking about such fine margins. You know, it's like the difference between a good kicker and an elite kicker is like a couple of percentage. You know, it's a couple of percentage points in terms of field goals made and maybe a couple of yards in terms of maximum distance.
And plus the new kicker would have to like go through all the COVID protocols, wouldn't he? And they'd have to get used to Andy Lee holding for them and the new snap.
Yeah, exactly. It's holding protocols. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I reckon that Cliff Kingsbury also probably has about 8 fake field goals up his sleeve as well, which the new kicker would need to learn. So, I mean, at this point, I totally understand the, you know, the brigade calling for the sacking of Zane Gonzalez, and I'm not totally against it, but it would need to be for the right person, you know, and I don't think there's anybody out there at the moment.
I mean, there's Adam Vinatieri, he's like 45 or something like that, you know, he still wants to kick.
Kickers can go really old for sure.
It's not really something we're going to do this late in the season, I don't think, you know, when we've actually got one option already on the roster. You know, if we do make a change, it'll be to him. And that's it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there.
Other than that, we just have to put up with the enigma that is Zane Gonzalez.
I do think that he's going to have to do something quite special in the remaining part of the season to be able to, you know, definitely stay on.
I think after the season, you know, it's a completely different ballgame, isn't it? Because there'll be far more time to work players out, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Especially, hopefully, in the kind of, you know, in the coming, off-season when there might be a bit more chance to do kind of, you know, activities and you know, bringing in guys for workouts and stuff like that.
They'll probably only be allowed if they've had a vaccine though.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll have to wait and see what the future holds for all of that, but in the meantime we've still got negatives to get through, and for the first time I think this season the offensive performance in general, you know, not special teams but like the offense itself.
Yeah, I mean, like, it wasn't the best performance we see from a Cardinals offense under Cliff Kingsbury. Some say that Kyler wasn't 100%, but I don't really know if to believe that or not, because, you know, he said he was fine. Cliff said he was fine. Patrick Peterson said he'd noticed nothing different than usual. So, you know, I don't think it's on Kyler Murray, this one.
Well, I mean, you say that, but I would definitely say there was a huge lack of rushing attempts that we saw.
Yeah, but that could have easily been down to New England, like, putting the clamps on him, making sure he doesn't go anywhere.
It could have been, but people have been attempting to put the clamps on him for, you know, 3/4 of a season and nobody else has managed it. And I don't think New England's defensive line is particularly excellent at that. I mean, maybe they were always playing a spy on him. I never kind of noticed that particularly, but, you know, he's managed to get good runs and get a solid run game going, you know, throughout the game. In plenty of other games with tough defensive lines. Although that being said, our running backs were also not particularly having a great time there.
I mean, we have got one running back who's in the positive section of the game. He's actually snuck in there, but, you know, he might be the only one who's had positives.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know that. I think I'm kind of in the camp of people who's saying that Kyler wasn't 100%, because I also think it's 100% in the interests of Cliff Kingsbury and the rest of the team to be saying that, you know, Kyler's fine.
I mean, Kyler said himself that he's fine, though, so if you're not going to believe anyone else, you're going to believe the guy himself, aren't you? Because he's not going to play if he's not 100%.
I think that he would play. I think he would play at 95%. You know, there's fine and there's fine, right? Like, there's, you know, my shoulder is a bit tinged and, you know, like, but okay, it's fine, I'll play. And there's, you know, actually being out due to injury because you, like, physically can't play. And I definitely think Kyler's got the kind of mentality that if he can play, and if he's been told he can play without aggravating whatever injury he has, then he would.
I mean, I don't think we'll ever know for sure what happened, do we? Like, if he is actually injured, only he knows if he's injured. Only the staff know that he's injured, but they're not going to say anything in public, are they?
No, for sure. And I do think that the big immediate argument to that is that, you know, Kyler is probably the single biggest asset that the Cardinals have, and it's therefore unlikely that they would put him in any situation where he could be, you know, injured any further.
Or even injured at all.
But it was, you know, definitely a slightly odd stalled offense. You know, we had a couple of really, really long drives.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we've not really become accustomed to with the Cardinals, especially under Cliff Kingsbury, have we? Not these, like, long 15-play drives which take, like, 8 minutes off the clock.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for one, it was just a fast game overall, and I think in no small part due to this. And I think, you know, a lot of it probably comes down to the kind of lack of chunk plays. We went for it a few times with bigger plays, especially down the sidelines, and a couple of them were kind of missed opportunities, missed catches, and out of bounds, you know, kind of shenanigans going on. But we never, you know, I'm struggling to think of a big play that we had that went for, you know, a significant chunk of yardage. I'm thinking, you know, 15, 20 plus.
Yeah, I don't think we had too many. Yeah, I mean, we did have on the first drive, Andy Isabella had his run for like 19 yards.
That is true, I will give you that. But, you know, it's not like the Cardinals. You know, normally we would be expecting kind of almost one of those a drive, you know, if not every other drive.
I think that's probably more down to the defensive coaching, though. Like, their plays sort of thing, like neutralizing off deep threats, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's really hard to disentangle from this, isn't it? Is like, did New England's defense just play a blinder? But I mean, the one thing that I've got to say, you know, the closing remark I have to say, if we're talking about offense, is basically just, you know, this is the first time all year and possibly even last year a little bit as well, where we're talking about the offense not being able to keep up with the defense and not the other way around.
And I've got one more thing to add as well, and that's the fact that DeAndre Hopkins, when he catches a touchdown, the Cardinals are 4-0. And every other game where he's not caught a touchdown, we've lost.
That's crazy.
So basically just throw the ball to Hopkins and...
Yeah.
Another negative I've got down is the offensive line. You know, another week, another set of offensive line struggles, except for maybe DJ Humphries, because I didn't really notice him put his foot wrong too much.
Yeah, but I mean, generally, you know, Kyler really getting knocked back and having to throw off his back foot quite a few times, having to get, you know, really, really pressured, which is not something that we were kind of used to seeing, especially in the first half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely got to him a fair bit more than anyone else seems to have done this season. Although they didn't really have any standout, like, pass rushers or anything like that. So obviously the schemes outmatched our offensive protections, that sort of thing.
I got to say, you know, one of the things that the Patriots have been doing really well this season is rotating guys in and out as they're needed. You know, everyone was getting a shot to kind of play, and that gives every player a chance to kind of develop a real speciality. And I wonder if that's part of what we were seeing there, you know, that it's like them calling a play or noticing that we were going for a run and calling for, you know, gaps to be plugged and, you know, bringing in guys who are just really good at plugging an A-gap.
I mean, it's definitely a possibility because the New England Patriots are obviously well coached, and you can see that just because you've got Bill Belichick there, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I mean, in general, offensive line definitely seemed to struggle. A few penalties as well, which is not great. Penalties-wise, didn't you keep a running total of penalties this week?
I did in the running total was actually 6 penalties for 50 yards. So that's actually...
That's pretty reasonable compared to what we had the other week, for sure.
And I was expecting loads of them. That's why I started recording them. But then it was like, yeah, I was had to wait for ages and ages for them all to come.
Yeah, of course. Our final negative, I guess you would say, for the game is questionable decision making. Something that has had people calling for Cliff Kingsbury to resign this week.
What's new, though?
Yeah, I know, that's true.
One loss and then everyone's like, get him out of here. It's like, if we worked like that, no one would have a job in Arizona.
Yeah, for sure. I would say that in this case, there's definitely a few that were at least contentious, if not wrong, you know.
I mean, the one especially at the end of the first half was probably the biggest one. You know, I said to go for it. Then I also said that he was an idiot for going for it. You know, I hedged my bets there.
It's a really, you know, it's a hard thing to disentangle the hindsight from it, isn't it?
I mean, like, I don't blame him going for it because, you know, it's 4th and 1 on, like, the half-yard line. You should think, yeah, someone's going to pick up half a yard, surely.
Yeah, I think especially given the Cardinals, you know, run of form in that part of the field, I would have definitely, you know, considered going for it there. And you know, at the end of the day, it's at the end of the half and you've got a lot of time to make up for a mistake if it goes wrong. You know, I guess it's interesting that, you know, a lot of the same people that are saying get Zane Gonzalez out of there are also the same people saying we should have gone for 3 there. I mean, I'm aware that there's a difference between the shot that he had at the end of the game and like a little chip shot from there. But equally, you know, you are right down on the half yard line. You've nearly got the ball in a few times. In fact, there's a lot of argument to say that there was, in fact, a touchdown on that drive as well.
Yeah, exactly. On the Kenyon Drake like dive over, it looked like maybe he wasn't down at all, but the ball had crossed the line. Yes, he wasn't replayed because it was like the end of the half. And I suppose the referees wanted the oranges, didn't they, or whatever they are.
Yeah, they wanted their orange slices. I mean, these things are always really quite difficult to overturn because you need that like solid evidence. And from what I can see, you know, a lot of the camera angles that were shown, they show the ball going over, but they don't show that the knee is not on the ground. And that's what you need. You need this, you know, the same thing showing twice. But yeah, I think I don't envy Cliff having to make that decision with that much, you know, attention on you. But I think I would rather, you know, take that touchdown and go into the half with the lead.
I mean, we were going in with the lead anyway, weren't we? It was just the fact that we were getting the ball back after the half anyway, so we had a chance of getting maybe back-to-back scoring drives, which would have maybe helped put the game to bed, sort of, or at least make it less likely for New England to win.
It puts them on the back foot for sure. And I guess, like, at the end of the day, the calculation you've got to make in your head when you're looking at that is, do I think I have a 50% or better chance of getting a touchdown here? Because I can take 3 guaranteed points, or I can take 6. And if you think that you've got a more than 50% chance of getting a touchdown, which statistically in that situation the Cardinals do, I think you go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have definitely gone for it. I stick by that being the correct decision. In hindsight, maybe they should have taken the 3 points, but hindsight isn't a thing.
There's also plenty of other opportunities that we could have gone for 3 points and, you know, tied up the game or whatever. But, you know, let's talk about some of the positives, actually. Like, there are definite positives, and for once, I think one of them is the defense.
Yeah, but before we get to the positives, we have one more negative, and that's the fact that the Kyler Murray section has been cancelled for this week.
It's on hiatus.
I'm sorry for all the fans who were waiting for it. There just wasn't enough.
Yeah, it's a hard one to put together in a week where his performance was kind of difficult to unpick from the New England defense and from our offensive line and things like that.
Yeah, so we'll get on to the positives though. And as you just mentioned, the defense, that's actually back in the positives for the first time in a while, I think.
And you've written it down here, and I think one of the, you know, easiest things to say there is that this loss was not on the part of the defense.
Absolutely not, especially when they stymied Cam Newton all game long, limiting him to 84 passing yards on 9 for 18 with 2 interceptions. Although he did run for 46 on 9 carries. But even still, that's like nowhere near anything Cam Newton's done to us in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely you know, the best game against Cam Newton that I can remember. Because not only did, you know, we get two ints on him, but we also got three sacks.
Devondre Campbell, Trevon Coley, and Isaiah Simmons cropped up once again with another sack. Again, I think his was probably the most impressive of the bunch.
Yeah, definitely. I have to agree there. They were all kind of quality sacks, all for decent losses. And then, of course, two massive plays, particularly Dre Kirkpatrick, but both him and Marcus Golden got a pick apiece. Dre Kirkpatrick in to kind of set the tone of the game earlier, really.
No, it was Marcus Golden who had it first, because that was like after our first scoring drive. No, actually, they got the ball, didn't they?
Yeah, they got the ball, yeah. And then Kirkpatrick took it from him. Golden took it.
Yeah, it was Jordan Hicks forced the bad throw.
Forced that, but I could have sworn that was Dre Kirkpatrick that then caught that.
No, it was Golden who got the first one.
I might be mixing them up in my head, but anyway, point being, you know, early pick to kind of set more of the tone of the game. And yeah, in general, the defense as a whole played extremely well, and it's just a shame that the offense wasn't able to, you know, keep up its usual pace.
You wouldn't be too surprised to hear then that our player of the game came from the defensive unit, and it might have actually been our closest vote ever.
I mean, I can see the numbers in front of me, and it's definitely one of the closest votes I've ever seen, if not the closest.
Yes, we have 30.3%, and second place was Marcus Golden. But Devondre Campbell won with 31.8% of the vote.
I mean, that really is close, isn't it?
We didn't even get Bird Gang Bowl Awards that close.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think that's a pretty fair set of votes, to be honest. I could see easy arguments either way for either of those guys being player of the game.
Yeah, I mean, Campbell had a huge game. He just seemed to be everywhere. Kind of like Isaiah Simmons against Seattle.
Yeah, definitely. Just, you know, menacing the offense and you know, really getting up in Cam Newton's face a lot, which I think was definitely instrumental in him going, you know, 9 for 18. Because that's a ridiculously low number for Cam Newton anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And also, Campbell had two or three tackles for loss as well, so he was just active all over the field.
And, you know, it's important that happens. Sometimes it is really, like, one guy, you know, I don't think that it was a one guy effort in terms of the defense stepping up this time, but I do think that when you've got that one guy who's just clicking and he's just everywhere, it makes everyone else's job easier in the process.
And of course, I think with his performance this week, he kept Isaiah Simmons off the field a bit more, because like he was struggling last week with the injury, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. And you know, at the end of the day as well, you've got to remember that Isaiah Simmons, you know, not only is he a rookie, but he's a rookie who never got any, you know, preseason practice or particularly big team camps or anything like that. So, you know, he's still adapting to the pace of the NFL.
And our last positive from this game we've got down is Kenyon Drake, who might have been the lone bright spot on the offense. But it's fair to say he ran well with 78 yards and two touchdowns on 22 carries.
Yeah, arguably a third touchdown as well.
I mean, we could debate that, but it won't get us anywhere, sadly.
But yeah, I mean, two touchdowns on 22 carries, 78 yards, you know, really just kind of putting the ball where it was needed. And once again, you know, he's just such a different runner to what we were seeing, you know, for a few games during the season. And you can still see that change in mentality that he's had. You can see him taking that north-south route more often. You can see him finding that hole and just, you know, going for it. And it really just seems to get defenses, you know, sure, the touchdowns are flashy, but those mid-yardages that he's picking up when he's getting, you know, sometimes like 5-6 yards per carry on these like little runs, that's the kind of thing that keeps your offense churning along.
I think he caught 4 or 5 passes as well from the backfield, which is high considering how like not much he's been used in that role this year. It's been more Chase Edmonds getting those, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's you know, it's odd to see him used as a receiver, but when he was used, he was very effective.
Do you think we got any more positives to talk about, or should we move on to some fantasy football?
To be honest, I'm glad to see this game in the rear mirrors. I think that's my last positive, is that's that game over. And next week is a bright, brand new week.
Although we're not really looking forward to that game either, but we'll get onto that in a bit.
Yes, indeed.
But now, before we get into the fantasy football section, disclaimer, as we're recording this game before the rearranged Pittsburgh Baltimore game, so there might still be players to play, but I think we can make a good enough guess as to how the game is going to come out. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to make such a massive comeback in one game anyway.
Yeah, I think we can pretty much state that we kind of know at least the general consensus of how this is going to go. Definitely weird. You know, we were considering at one point moving our recording night to a Wednesday from a Tuesday. And I'm glad we didn't bother because it has, I've been postponed yet again to Wednesday night. So it'll be interesting to see how both those teams deal with such a short week, because that's an extremely short week. That is assuming that it does, in fact, go ahead on Wednesday.
Exactly. There's still time for them to change that all around. But sadly, there's one thing that won't change around, and that's my result in the Birdgang Bowl this week, as I lost in the top of the league clash. I mean, I've still got Juju Smith-Schuster to play, but I'm behind by 158 to 126.7. So it'd take quite a massive score for that to turn around in my favour.
We have seen Juju pull out a game like that before.
I mean, if he wants to like recreate Tyreek Hill's performance from Sunday, you know, I'm all for that happening. I'll put a message to him out on social media after.
Yeah, just tweet him and say, by the way, if you could just do this for me, that would be great.
I mean, like, had I put in Austin Hooper and the Washington defense instead of Philadelphia's, it would have meant that I'd only needed to score 9 points from him. So, you know, that's a winnable game that I've gone and lost, which sounds just like the Cardinals.
Well, it seems to be a theme this week, especially in the Birdgang Bowl, because I've still got Chris Boswell to play on Wednesday, but at the moment I am losing 99.1 to 84.2 against Blair's Tactical Nook. Yeah, one of those games where if I just played, you know, a single player differently, if I'd put Aaron Rodgers in instead of Kyler Murray, I would have absolutely won this game, but, you know, between Kyler performing way under expectations and Emmanuel Sanders going absolutely nowhere all game, you know, I don't see myself winning that one particularly, unless Chris Boswell decides that he's going to get random drug screened again because he's getting, you know, 60-yard field goals or something like that.
I wish we had a kicker who could do that, but, you know.
Yeah, no random drug screening for Zane Gonzalez.
And sadly, they did not decide to stop the count after the Thanksgiving doubleheader in our Dynasty game, where I was actually winning and projected the win. But then along came Derrick Henry, Allen Robinson, and Jerry Bosa to give Callum a 210.7 to 148.8 win. And he's still got Chase Claypool still to play.
Yeah, it's that one's definitely over mathematically, but I got to say, you know, after Thanksgiving, I was looking at it and I was looking at that projected win like, ooh, am I really about to split the series with the guy at the bottom of the league? But thankfully I managed to pull it out. My pride is restored, but I think that makes one clean sweep season each within the Dynasty League for us.
I think it does, yeah, because last year, obviously I beat you twice. This year you beat me twice. Next year we'll have the rubber match.
Yeah, next year make it all to play for.
Hopefully, anyway.
Speaking of fantasy and stuff in the weekly pick'ems, obviously we don't know the outcome of the Pittsburgh game yet, but we did both select Pittsburgh to win that one. Qualitative games either don't change because it'll either be 11-9 or 12-10 to yourself, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely take 12-10 to be correct instead. But, you know, whichever happens, it closes a gap between us to 1 point, with you on 119 and me on 118, or 120 and 119.
It's crazy how that gap has, like, you know, it's been relatively consistent all season. I think the maximum difference has been like 4 or 5, but yeah, down to 1, so getting close, all to play for in the final stretch of the season.
I mean, I've definitely closed it down in the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks. Actually picking properly.
You've been catching up a little bit, kind of slowly but surely.
Although you have fallen off in the British Birdgang League, I see. I think you're like 2 behind the lead now.
Yeah, I have indeed. I was number 1 for such a long time, but it definitely is still playable, I think.
Yep, so looking at the same games this week, we've both gone for Baltimore to beat Dallas whenever the hell they decide to play that game. We've got Indianapolis over Houston, Miami over Cincinnati, Minnesota over Jacksonville, the Raiders over the Jets, Pittsburgh over Washington, again, whenever the hell that gets played.
Yeah, exactly.
Tennessee over Cleveland, Seattle over the New York Giants, Green Bay over Philadelphia, Kansas City over Denver, and Buffalo over San Francisco.
Yeah, that leaves us with three differences this week in the New Orleans-Atlanta game. Tom, you're going with Atlanta.
I am, yes. I'm just not impressed with New Orleans now they've got Tyson Hill at quarterback.
Yeah, I have to agree. They're really not, you know, playing particularly well. But I've also seen the Atlanta Falcons choke away plenty of leads so far this season and you know, really wouldn't put it past them doing it again.
But he did just put up 41 against the Raiders this past weekend.
I do think that they have the ability to score points, but I also think that New Orleans has the ability to score points, even if it's you know, with a pretty poor defense. And you know, they do still have a decent set of targets as well. You know, it may not be Drew Brees at quarterback anymore, but they are still capable of scoring points. And you know, it's, I guess, which team do you trust less? And at the moment, I still don't trust Atlanta. They have a track record.
I mean, I do see that as well. And also, I think it was like 20% going with Atlanta, something around that mark. So, you know, it would be a huge shock if they do end up picking this off. But if they do, I look like a genius.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of looking like a genius, I think you will definitely look like a genius if, as you predict, Detroit beat Chicago. Detroit, who have just fired their head coach, had a 0 point game. And just, you know, having an all-round bad time.
And that's precisely why I've decided to choose them, because they got rid of Matt Patricia.
Do you reckon with somebody else calling the shots and calling the playbook that they will have a better time then? Or is it more of a just general leadership thing?
I think so, yeah. I'll go down that route, yeah, because, I mean, I'm still not convinced by Chicago. And also with us looking for the playoffs as well, we need them to actually not win games, so... If Detroit wins this one, it helps us.
That's a very good point. Yeah, Cardinals hunt. They definitely need Detroit to win this. But, you know, historically, teams who've just fired their head coach, you know, obviously they're not doing well in the first place in that situation. But traditionally, they are not turned around kind of, you know, very quickly.
I mean, it's happened in Houston. They've started to look a lot better without getting rid of their one.
But I do also think that they were kind of, I don't know, Bill O'Brien's a funny one, yeah, but it's also didn't happen overnight for them, you know. It's not like they got rid of Bill O'Brien and then they were immediately better.
No, that's true. They obviously have to change a bit of the culture around there. It just goes to show you shouldn't really hire New England.
Like, yeah, alumni.
Yeah, anyone who's ever been associated with New England, just don't hire them. Not in a coaching role anyway. We're fine. It's like an ex-quarterback is our head coach.
It's funny because you kind of like assume that some of the coaching, the good coaching, rubs off on them, and it just never seems to. But yeah, I think that should be a game to watch. I would be surprised if Detroit is able to come back that quickly, but I would kind of love to see it. I guess it depends on, you know, how much of what's wrong at Detroit is like already rotten, you know, versus how much of it was Matt Patricia stinking the place up.
And our last difference this week also has New England involved with the LA Chargers versus the Patriots. We have decided to go with the Chargers.
Honestly, this one was probably the most coin-tossy game to call, aside from our own, which we'll get onto in a second. But, I mean, I think the NFL.com predictions were at 50-50 properly. People definitely undecided about this one.
I mean, you can see why, because the Chargers have obviously had a good season, but like us, they're just not either scoring enough to like win convincingly. And then, like, losing painfully, like, by, like, a late score, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it really does. It really follows the same pattern. And that's kind of the reason that I went with New England there, because they were able to capitalize on our version. But to be honest, I mean, much in the same way that our game against New England was decided, you know, kind of by coin toss, I imagine that this one will be as well. I think it'll be just a close game. And I think it will go down to, you know, who doesn't make a key mistake at a certain point in the game.
Yeah, I could see that. But obviously, I'd like to see the Chargers win it because they have a lot nicer uniform than the Patriots.
And I've put down the Patriots because that would just, that would put a like smacker on it, wouldn't it? It's just, they just win because they're the Patriots, you know.
Should we move on to our game preview for the game which we're not looking forward to?
I'm not looking forward to it. I think it will be a good game, kind of regardless of how it goes. But indeed, we do have Cardinals versus the Rams this Sunday at 9:05 p.m. in the UK. which is kind of back to our regularly scheduled programming kickoff time, which is nice. Get our red zone in first.
Only for 1 week before we're back on the 6 o'clock game, so but we'll deal with that when we come to it.
Yeah, we'll take our moments while we can, but yeah. The Rams, NFC West, rubbing off on them, whatever, you know, they are looking promising this season.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming into this game 7-4, but they're coming into it on the back of a 23-20 loss to San Francisco. I suppose beating the Niners isn't for everyone, is it?
I mean, that was definitely a bit of an upset, right? Because they lost to them earlier in the season, but I don't think anyone would have had the Niners beating the Rams in that capacity.
Especially the Niners with like 20-odd players on injured reserve and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they really are in bits, and, you know, the Rams are relatively healthy and everything. I think it would have been, unsurprising for a Rams victory there. But, you know, as it stands, that loss puts them to 7-4, a record which we could have so easily been on Sunday as well. Instead, we're obviously 6-5. And, you know, it kind of makes me think, in some ways, that we're going into this game on relatively even pegging.
I mean, in general, from this season record, yeah, we are. But the fact that Sean McVay is 6-0 versus the Cardinals, that has to end sometime, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, it's like back in the day when they were the St. Louis Cardinals, you know, we would have that back and forth with them where we were like regularly splitting the series. And then, you know, the last 3 years, effectively, it's just come down to the Rams just, you know, destroying us. Obviously, in some seasons, that was a lot worse than others. But, you know, the kind of, I guess, new revamped Rams in general have done really well against us.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to run through any of the previous outings. Definitely not the one in what happened somewhere nearby-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, not that one, and definitely not the one that happened in LA in their first year there with Josh Rosen, because that was a painful one as well. But they have, yeah, scored at least 31 points in those six games, and they have an average margin of victory of 23 points.
It just looks bad, doesn't it, when it's written down like that? Even though we've actually witnessed all the games, we know how bad they were anyway. Just brings it back.
I gotta say, there's a couple of games that are particularly stand out to make that, you know, margin of victory, that average, you know, bring it up. But, you know, that being said, it's not something that this year's Cardinals have done. You know, we've had, I don't actually know what our largest margin of loss was, but it's definitely nowhere near 23.
The largest one we've had this year is 10. We've had a loss by 10, we've lost by 7, and then the other 3 we've lost by 3 points.
Yeah, so, you know, the majority of losses that we've had so far this season are one-score losses, and then, you know, a two-score loss. And, you know, that's a four-score loss, essentially, that we're talking about for 23. So anything can happen, cardiac cards and all that, but even if we lose this one, there's not a chance in my mind that we are losing it as badly as we have done in the past.
If we lose by 20-odd points, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, if we lose by 20-odd points, you know, tune in next week for the world's most despondent podcast. But I really don't see it happening. You know, I think that provided the Cardinals' offense can kind of give itself a kick and restart itself and, you know, get back to the way it has been playing in even the past few losses, I think that we can at least hold this game to be close, if not be able to squeak out a win, which I would love to do.
If we lose by 20 this game, we're not doing a podcast next week.
Yeah, we'll take the week off. although, I mean, in terms of how we're losing, you know, if we're going to lose, it's not for lack of talent on their team. You know, if we're talking about kind of defensive lines, and, you know, defensive lines have gotten the Cardinals a bit of trouble this season, Aaron Donald, one of the single best D linemen in the game, has 10 sacks this season.
Yes, I have to wonder how many more he'll get on Sunday, especially if J.R. Sweezy plays.
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on the combination of obviously both our offensive line and which offensive line shows up. And, you know, there's another unit that I really hope is able to kind of give themselves a slap awake for this game on Sunday. I think the other thing is whether or not Kyler Murray is going to be back to his old self in terms of his runs and stuff, because you can't load up the box too much. You can't rush him too much if he's going to be able to rush past you and get those runs away. You know, that's the sort of thing that's going to keep it away from sack territory and force them into like taking a step back in coverage.
The likes of Darnold, obviously, on defense, and you've also got Jalen Ramsey, who I'm sure will be shadowing DeAndre Hopkins all game long.
Yeah, is Ndamukong Suh still playing for them?
I don't think he is, no. I think he's with Tampa Bay, I think.
Yeah, he's Tampa Bay. He's Tampa Bay. Don't know why I had it in my head that he was still there, but, you know, they've always been a terrifying defensive line for the past few years, and you know, they continue to be, you know, regardless of personnel, you know, purely because Aaron Donald is there. You know, I think it's unrealistic to expect him to not get a sack at some point on Sunday, but I think, you know, that would be a key element to the victory, is holding him from having multiple sacks, let's say.
And I'm sure we'll learn other Rams defensive players, like...
as they make plays. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Then we'll learn who they are.
We'll find out, you know, who J.R. Sweezy's been holding, for instance.
I mean, also on the other side of the ball, they've got Jared Goff, who continues to be making people wonder, is he actually any good? Or is it just the Sean McVay system which makes him look good?
It's funny, he's got a little bit of the old flacometer to him, you know, of like, sometimes he can just look spectacular and other times he can't. But, you know, I think as well, he is also just within that system, and he's got incredible wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, like Cooper Kupp's a decent wide receiver. Robert Woods, he's another one. He'll seem to, like, I don't know, cause us problems every year.
You know, I think it's one of those situations, again, where we've got one shutdown corner and we've got a corner that is just open. You know, there's so much pressure on that side of the field at that point. And I think that's something that we're going to see, is basically we're going to shut down one wide receiver and we're going to have one wide receiver who's open. And that's something that we always struggle to deal with teams who have kind of not necessarily no star wide receivers, but kind of, I guess, two guys sharing the limelight.
Look back a couple of weeks ago, they scored, I think it was like 30 plus fantasy points each. So obviously they had decent games.
Yeah. You know, there's they are spreading the ball about between the two of them, but equally, you know, I can think of examples of games in the past couple of weeks where, you know, one of them has just got the lion's share of it, and that's because the other one has been covered by a corner.
But of course, we have to wonder who's covering who this week. Like, who's Patrick Peterson going to be on? Or are they just going to move them about so you'll never get too, like, comfortable with either of them?
Yeah, I think that there's a possibility that we see that happening. At the end of the day, it's also, you know, Patrick Peterson, like, the defense kind of has the choice who they want to pair him up with. But I think at a certain point, you're just going to have to put him on kind of the strong side of the field, as it were.
I'm trying to think who else they might have who causes problems on offense. Because I know they've got, like, three running backs at the moment who seem to be, like, sharing the load, don't they? There's Henderson, there's Brown, and there's Cam Akers.
I think one of the problems that you've got any time that you're dealing with a committee is that you've constantly got the threat of fresh legs on the field. You know, when you've got, particularly at the end of like a big, long slog of a push, you know, if you're able to keep them to short yardage, but they can't keep managing to convert on third and fourth, you know, that the ability to just constantly have somebody cycled in who is like ready to go and ready to run is a recipe for how you get, you know, completely stomped and completely run over.
That's definitely something we'll have to watch out for, especially because I mean, the defensive line might be getting a little bit more healthy, but I'm sure they haven't been able to add anyone else this week, like after adding several last week.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think on top of that, we've also got to remember the fact that with, you know, players testing positive for COVID left, right and center, that we might end up with somebody, you know, with a positive COVID test in the next couple of days, at which point, you know, that's a unit that's going to suffer. We can hope, you know, I think it would be unlikely that we have absolutely nobody with a positive COVID test, especially after all the Thanksgiving stuff. How that works out in practice, I don't know, but I think the best you can hope for is that you get somebody who is, you know, a bench player or a practice squad player or something like that.
Just depends how well they followed hands, face, space, that sort of thing. Or whatever the American equivalent is.
Hands, face, space is good. Also, a good moniker for how not to commit penalties in American football. If you see a if you see a face, then give your hands some space away from it. There you go. Well, I think it's about time that we try and put a prediction down for this game, which is yet another difficult one to predict. It's one of two that is exactly 50-50 on the NFL.com fan pick'em at the moment.
And I was actually torn with this one. Like, do I go with an LA win? Because, you know, it's probably going to happen anyway. But I'm thinking we actually win this one narrowly. But then they'll get their revenge in January when we play them again in their backyard.
In terms of playoff contention, at this point, after losing the game to New England, we really need to split the series with the Rams at least. And I think that this is our best chance to do it while we're at home.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with a 24-20 Cardinals win.
That's a nice close game there. And actually, I mean, I'm thinking basically along the same lines. I was going to go for 24-21. But yeah, it's basically the same idea there, you know.
We'll keep it close and then hopefully it'll go our way this time as opposed to the opponents.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see a more convincing win, but I think of all the opponents that we've got left to play this season, the Rams are highly unlikely to be a team that we, you know, are able to get a close win against, or to get a non-close win. You know, if we get a win, I think we will be lucky and it will be a little thing. And, you know, you never know, maybe Zane Gonzalez will redeem himself and be able to put up some ridiculous yardage.
You never know. But, of course, we'll find that out when we watch the game on Sunday and then review it next week in our next episode of the British Bird Gang Breakdown.
You say that when we hopefully watch it on Sunday.
Well, I mean, we're not the Baltimore Ravens. We're not, like, being stupid all about this COVID stuff, are we? At least I hope not, anyway.
That's true.
So, yes, if you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Bird Gang. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/British Beard Gang and join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Beard Gang. Buy British Beard Gang merchandise at britishbeardgang.tmail.com and the British Beard Gang coffee shop. And of course, if you're buying from NFL shop, remember to click our affiliate link and make your order in time for Christmas. You know, everyone wants one of those new Kyler Murray jerseys for everyone.
You're not allowed to buy new jerseys, Tom, as we've discussed, because you just jinx them.
I've got to buy a custom one with my own name on, so I can only curse myself then.
Exactly.
And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, remember to leave us a review on whichever format you listen to it on, preferably 5 stars, because that looks better on our profile. But yes, until next week's episode, thanks for listening and goodbye.
What he said.